Well, welcome. For those of you, I think everybody's pretty much been here before. Maybe not, but you're at the writer's room, which is... Oh, you never have. Well, welcome. The writer's room is the ultimate writer's habitat. As I say to my coaching clients, very often the main reason why it's hard for you to do something is because you're in the wrong place to do it. A lot of times when you're at your home, you're constantly distracted by your life, and when you're here, you are only focused on your writing. Idea Smith has been lucky to be a resident here for the last few months. And Idea Smith is a holistic consultancy, and we work with creative professionals. We find that most people are suffering either from being more creative than professional or more professional than creative. So we support people both through private mentoring and coaching, writing workshops, events like this that celebrate people's creativity, and also in an educational type way. And we also have started to launch other services, like people get up to the edge of what they can do and they need an assistant, or they need a nanny, or they need a tutor, or they need a web designer, and we are now helping recruit those people for our clients. And you don't have to be a client in any other capacity. If you just want that, we can also just do that. Anyway, I can talk to you more about that afterwards, but today we've got Stacey Harwood, who I am honored to say was a long ago client, and a brilliant writer in her own right. And I've invited her here today because one of the things that my clients are always struggling with figuring out how to do is how, you know, most of my clients are very, very talented, but then it's the problem is getting it from their garret to the marketplace, and how do you engage more people? And one thing that Stacey has done so brilliantly is curate this wonderful blog that is really a literary magazine that is associated with her husband's longtime fabulous series called The Best American Poetry. And it's been going on for over 25 years. And I'll stop there and let you explain further if there's a mission or a description that you would prefer.
Great. Well, first, thank you so much, Victoria, for having me. And if anybody needs a coach to finish that project, I highly recommend that you engage Victoria, because she's helped me over the hump more than once and really been so delighted to know you for a very long time now. So she's great. And thank you to the Writers' Room for hosting this, and congratulations on a great season. You've had some wonderful, spectacular events. So anyway, it's great to be here. Thank you, everybody, for braving the cold. It's freezing out there. So I'll talk about the blog. I'll give you a little bit of history and tell you where we are, and then I hope that since it's a small group, I hope you'll feel free to just kind of ask me questions as they come up, and we can see where it goes. So my husband started the Best American Poetry series back in 1988, and it's been a great going concern since then. We started the blog in 2008, and I don't know if you can remember, but that was like light years ago in the internet world. Things were so different. Blogs were mostly single person blogs, one person sort of popping off. And in the poetry field especially, which was what I was paying attention to, it was really negative and nasty and hostile. And so in 2008, Scribner published a book, The Best American Erotic Poetry, which we were sure was going to make a really big splash, and it did, and it still does. And at that time, we decided, so those two things happening at once, I thought, you know, let's have a blog around the book, and let's take control of the conversation so it's not so nasty. And so we just launched this blog. I set it up a very primitive design, and using TypePad. And the reason why we went to TypePad was because we had a little cyber stalker who took the name The Best American Poetry from basically all of the other platforms that were available. So I tried Blogger, I tried WordPress, I tried a bunch of other ones, and they were all tied up by this guy. So we were left with TypePad, which has its good things and bad things. So we didn't do any kind of major announcement, but with the book coming out, we decided to offer the invite the contributors, those whose poems were in the book, to write blog posts about what it meant, what erotic poetry was, just focused around the book. Some of them were so good, and they took to blogging so naturally that we thought, well, why don't we just ask them to keep writing for the blog? And that sort of developed into what we now have as basically our practice, which is to feature a different guest blogger every week. And plus we have a group of regular contributors who they've demonstrated that they're good writers, and they have access to the blog. They can post whenever they like, or they post on a schedule. So that's how we do it. A guest blogger comes in on a Monday, and they write once a day from Monday to Friday, and they can write about any subject. I generally prefer when they don't write about poetry, although, you know, naturally most of them write about poetry, but I like to show the world that poets are good prose writers, and that poets have interests outside of poetry, and those are the things that drive their poetry. So we have topics, Rain, you name it, and there's somebody has blogged about it. We have, you know, somebody's written about being a groupie and following Nick Cave all around Europe. Somebody's written about being a cater waiter. You know, every possible subject you can imagine, sports, boxing, food. You know, we just have a lot of different topics. It's oftentimes it's tied back to poetry, but it isn't always. So, let's see. One of the major goals initially was to use the blog as a platform to sell books. I mean, we're not e-commerce, but in the back of my mind is always, well, we want to sell books. And so whenever there's a guest blogger, if they have a book coming out, I like to schedule their guest blogging stint in connection with that, so it can be another way to promote their book or upcoming readings. So there's a book coming out, a book that just came out was an anthology of Jewish American poets, and so that editor was our guest blogger a couple of weeks ago. We were just talking earlier, there's a book coming out, an anthology of poems in the form of the Sestina. That editor is going to be blogging for us. He's blogged a number of times. And that's basically, you know, one of the major missions is to sell books. It's awesome.
And do you have a relationship with, like, the Amazon Associates, whatever they call it,
where you
can, like, buy it on Amazon?
We have an affiliate relationship with them, although I have to say it doesn't really generate much income for us. I mean, I think their return is so tiny on each sale that I don't always link the books to Amazon. Oftentimes I link them to the publisher's site, especially since a lot of the books are published by small presses. Or I'll link them to small press distribution or some other indie, you know, aggregator, because. And some of the writers have a preference. They ask not to go to Amazon for various reasons.
Can I ask questions?
Please.
So to find authors who have books about to be launched, do you search like Publishers Lunch or Media Bistro, or how do you?
No, we just know. I mean, you know, we're out in the world, and you know, usually what happens is I'll meet somebody, or my husband will meet somebody, and we'll know they have a book coming out just because they tell us, and we'll arrange it that way. Or I'll invite somebody to blog and say, do you have a book coming out? When is it coming out? We can, I schedule very far in advance.
Do you think that would be a good source, though, for, I'm thinking of myself, plugged into that world and be writing about or inviting bloggers on literary topics necessarily. I'm in the business world. But as of now, I would not know who has a book that's about to be launched.
Well, I mean, we didn't start. It didn't start that way, and it's certainly not a hard and fast rule. It's just a nice opportunity when it does happen. Mm-hmm. So if I needed to find writers with books coming out, I could do that. I get a lot of catalogs coming from the publishers that have their list for the next year. A lot of times, I'll reach out to writers whose poems have been chosen for the anthology, which I probably should do more systematically, just because it would be a good way to promote the book. But you know, it's just one of those. It's sort of organic. If it happens, it's great. There's one of the upcoming writers I'm really excited about is that she's an editor, and she's one of these kind of Wonder Women. She's a lawyer. She's a editor of a poetry magazine. She designs handbags. and she's a certified tarot card reader.
And she who certifies tarot card reader?
She has a book coming out next year. She's going to blog about it, and I'm just really excited. I think it's going to be fascinating. So it's a lot of it is word of mouth, and you know, I'll see something on Facebook. There's another writer, Victoria Chang. She's a very talented poet. She just wrote a book about, her book of poems is all about the world of work. I think the title is Boss. I heard her on NPR.
Yeah.
So we're Facebook friends. And Facebook is a really great resource for that kind of thing, and Twitter. So, yeah, that's, and one of the benefits of having a group blog is that it multiplies your readership. I mean, this, you know, every blogger comes with his or her own fan base, and they, you know, promote their posts among their friends, and then their publishers also promote them, and so that brings more people. And a lot of times I'll find somebody because they've left a provocative comment, and we'll start a correspondence. It's sort of a very sort of organic system. It's nothing, yeah.
Would you, what you're describing to me sounds like a genuine community.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah.
And would you say that in a way that actually engages the audience and the public that wind up buying books more than if...
Yeah, I mean, I hope that it leads to buying books. I don't haven't seen, you know, you don't see a direct relationship, but it's certainly one of the most satisfying, rewarding benefits that I didn't anticipate. Is the community that's grown out of it. A lot of the bloggers would never otherwise know each other, and they know each other now from all over the world, and they support each other. Some of them are editors of literary journals. They'll get poems from people who've blogged whose work they never would have seen before. They meet up every year. I don't know how many of you are familiar with AWP, the Association of Writing Programs. They have an annual conference that's huge. I think, I don't know, have you ever been?
Mm-hmm.
Was there like 50,000 people there or
probably,
something?
Probably.
I mean, it was huge. And so the bloggers meet each other there. They get together. We did a panel at the Chicago AWP conference. Whether it was 2 or 3 years ago, and it was a full house. I mean, there were a couple hundred people in the audience, which was pretty amazing. And several of them were there because they wanted to meet bloggers whom they'd met through the blog and see them in person and talk. And it's really great in that regard. So I recommend that if you're sort of out there by yourself, then you a group blog is a great way to connect with other writers, and in a way that's very supportive. I mean, we have a policy. I used to put this in every sort of letter that I wrote to a guest blogger. I have a sort of a form email that I send to them, you know, telling them what our guidelines are. And I used to say, I don't have to say it anymore, you know, no negative book reviews and no personal attacks. And that's just the culture of the blog, and it's developed that way. Try to stay away from politics. That's not always possible. But it's a very positive voice that comes through, and I think that's a really, really good thing.
Well, the thing I've been so impressed about, and I think is testament to both your personality and your wisdom and your invitations of who you have on your... But so many people say, oh, my God, I have to do a blog. That's one more thing to do, and it's exhausting, et cetera. And you enjoy this, and and you're not wrecked and exhausted. So, want to talk a little bit about how you've kept the quality up without being a micromanaging perfectionist?
Well,
like somebody else who might exhaust herself.
I know my limitations. I do enjoy it, and I mean, I struggle because I also, as Victoria knows, I do like to have my own writing projects that I don't find the time, as much time as the blog wants, it can take. And so I've tended to neglect my own writing projects, and sometimes I feel resentful of that. But I find that it's really great to meet all these writers. A lot of them are young. I would never meet them otherwise. And I have ongoing, wonderful relationships with One of our contributors is in Korea. He teaches English at a university in Korea. You know, there's a group in Chicago that I don't know what they're serving in the water there. They're just brilliant. And there's one fellow who blogged for us about a year ago, and we just have a lovely relationship. He's in this volume, and he posts once a month. He posts limericks on the blog. They're really fantastic, and he has a book coming out of limericks. He's got an illustrator,
and it
started with the blog.
Well, that's awesome.
He wrote a long piece about Edward Lear, who was sort of the father. He considers him to be the grand poobah of limericks. And then he started writing his own, and he's one of these people who, you know, he gets this form in his head, and he thinks in limericks now. And so he does a roundup roughly around the first of the month, and he has an illustrator, and that's how it's evolved. It's really great. And that brings me to another one of the very satisfying highlights is that at least one series of blog posts resulted in a book. This book that I brought with me by Jennifer Michael Hecht, who's one of our regular bloggers, started her project with a series of posts on the very unhappy subject of suicide, because a colleague of ours committed suicide, and a friend of hers, and this seemed to be, I'm really wandering. Is this okay?
No, this is great.
But there's a few years ago, there was a rash of very highly publicized in the poetry world of suicides. It was horrible. And we wrote about it because we knew these people. And Jennifer, who was also a history professor and a history of philosophy and a very talented poet, Nora knows her, she teaches at the New School. She wrote some beautiful posts, and they sort of went viral. They got published in print. They went all over the place. And over the next year or so, in fact, I printed out one of her posts. It's too long for me to read, but I'll read it out. She just kept on writing on the subject. She would basically finish off every post with, you know, don't kill yourself this week. I'll be back next week to encourage you some more. And so she wrote this beautiful book, and it came about because of what she was able to do on the blog. Another one of our contributors had a piece he wrote picked for the Best American Music Writing, and that was a really great honor to have that happen from a poetry blog. You sort of wonder who's reading your blog, and then you find out that, yeah, people are reading it.
Well, I don't want to be annoying, but I'm going to go back to the editing secret sauce. Is it like you know that they've already published and you can just trust they'll be professional? Like, how do you... because my sense is kind of like she knows how to hire. You know how to select somebody that you will... Because you said you've had, like, no duds. So
yeah, we had one. Okay. Early on, I had one very... I don't even want to repeat it, but it was so incredibly offensive that... Because I don't edit work. Typically, I'll give the guest writer an account. They don't have complete access to the sort of the underpinnings of the blog or the infrastructure, but they can post directly. They don't have to run their work by me. I don't approve topics. And only once was something so offensive, and I wrote to the writer, and I said, you know, this is disturbing. Can you give me some context? And she didn't answer me, so I just took it down. That was the only time. That was very early on. So I think it's a combination of things. I've seen the work, and so I know that they can write. I trust that I have a relationship. I think it's just kind of intuitive, because for some, I just have a sense that I'm going to have to review this person's work first, or if it's just a one-off. So one of our regular contributors covered an event that was up at Symphony Space the other night that was put on by Lucky Peach. And I'm going to look over her work first. She's a very good writer. I'm just going to look it over. She doesn't have access, full access. She's what I would call a junior. So a lot of it is just instinct. Some of it is word of mouth. So one of the great happy circumstances was January 2012, there was a fellow who had put up some really intelligent comments. I was very grateful to him, so I wrote to him. And And I said, you know, maybe you'd like to blog for us someday. And then it was years went by and we didn't connect. And I thought of him again. I think I must have seen his name somewhere. He's a graduate student at the University of Chicago. And he did a series of blog posts in January of 2012. And I brought one of them because I just think it's beautiful. And when he was done, I said, you know, can you recommend somebody? And he did. He made a recommendation who turned out to be this young poet. He's not so young. He's in his 40s. Well, that's young. His name is Michael Robbins, who's become sort of this superstar, rock star poet in the younger poet world. And this was before his book was reviewed twice in the New York Times and a lot of
they
best
never get reviewed in the New York Times.
I know, twice in the New York Times, in the Weekly and the Weekend. And great reviews. His work is really exciting. I highly recommend it. So then he did a week of blogging, and through that, actually, his book got reviewed in Entertainment Weekly because one of Entertainment Weekly's regular writers reads our blog and sometimes contributes. So he recommended somebody else who recommended somebody else, and so that's how it happens. And I just trust when somebody's a very good writer that they're going to recommend somebody who's also a very good writer, and that I'll take a chance. If it's not good, it's 5 days. You know, we have a lot of other stuff going up at the same time, all the time. It's not that big a deal, mm-hmm. I feel like. And people, I think, feel the pressure to live up to the standards of what they've seen. So they work hard on their posts. I hope they don't agonize over them, because that's not what blogging is really all about. But
I think that, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, I'm asking you these questions because I know that people here are going to try to extrapolate this to their own blogs.
Uh-huh.
And I think the key thing that I'm hearing is that you start with a great premise.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter how famous you are, whether or not you even have a book already published, I think if you aim high for an interesting type of discourse or an interesting topic, then you're going to attract people on the merits of your idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get a lot of requests, and now right now, I actually, you know, getting back to your question earlier, I get pitched a lot by publishers, by publicists. So and so has a book coming out. Would you be interested in having this person blog? And sometimes yes, sometimes no.
You just mentioned that you have a lot of stuff coming up at the same time. So what is the format? You have a guest blogger, and then have editorial.
Well, what we do, first of all, I'm the managing editor. My husband David is the editor. Every week when there's a new blogger, I announce it at the top of the blog, and the announcement stays up the entire week. And then that person will post at any time, because we have readers in every time zone. And it's a sort of a running, you know, it's like a running call, you know, and then people will sort of just jump on. So we have about 6 or 7 writers who reliably contribute at least a couple of times a month. And they're the ones who can just pop on whenever they want and put something up. So there's one writer, her name is Nin Andrews. She's another really fantastic poet. And the first Saturday of the month, she does something called Meet the Press, which is really worthwhile looking into, because she interviews the editors of small presses and gets at, you know, what's your publishing policy? Where do you find your writers? So she provides a lot of valuable information. She's been doing that now for a couple of years, so there's quite an archive there.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's really good. And she also does these fabulous cartoons. I mean, and she's just so talented. So she's on hiatus for the month of December because she's doing anti-fracking cartoons for an activist group. But she will take a canonical poet or poem and make up her own words and make a very funny cartoon out of it. They're hilarious. And so she does that on Mondays. So we have a few regular features that are reliably there. Plus, it's just sort of a jumble. I mean, I didn't have a lot going up yesterday. But, you know, there's just always, I think with a blog, with your readers, the thing that's helpful is for people to have a sense of how often they'll post. So they know, if you're only going to post 3 times a week and your readers know that, that's fine. They'll check your blog 3 times a week. But if they know that the content's always changing and always going up, you know, they'll come back more often. So we have a lot of people I can tell from our data that there is a certain group of people who come on often, but they stay for just a very little while because they've been there earlier in the day. There's nothing new, so they come back the next day. And so that's...
Yeah, I'm a big believer in not feeling like it has to be every day, especially if you're just starting a blog.
Yeah.
I think it's better to have higher quality.
Absolutely.
No matter what these rules are, I just feel like every single time somebody comes to your site, it may be the first and last time. So
that's
just
right.
to have padding for the sake of padding, I don't think is a good strategy,
yeah.
especially when you're starting out.
Yeah. I agree.
That's it. I mean, you should experiment and not be so, you know, uptight that you don't try things. But I think it's better to aim high than to, just neurotically think you have to have stuff.
No, right. I agree. Yeah, that's a good point.
Even as a reader of blogs, I subscribe to somebody's blog and then it became a barrage. I couldn't really separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah.
So I just unsubscribe.
And I don't, since it is just me, with some help sometimes, I don't do any kind of newsletter, you know, the way, like Goop, you get a newsletter in your inbox that tells you what's, you know, I don't do that, perhaps I should. I do make a lot of use of Facebook and Twitter, which, by the way, are really great for drawing an audience, I think.
Do you find Facebook better for one thing and Twitter for another?
You know, it depends. Yesterday, for some reason, a lot of our readers came from Facebook. But more often, it's Twitter. And so what I do is, first I will say this, that from talking to writers, who are at least those who are publishing with mainstream publishers, and it's probably true with small press, they want you to have a presence on social media. It's almost a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a drag, I think, for, you know...
So on Facebook, are you a page or an individual?
Well, I have both. I have a Facebook page for the blog. There's a Facebook page for the book, but I think we're gonna consolidate those. And then there's my own Facebook, and then there's my husband's, and he has like over 5,000 friends. Yeah. You know, what I do from the blog itself is automatically post to Facebook. With Twitter. Because Twitter will just share the link, I always want to put in a little teaser.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that with Twitter, the more personal, the more it looks like there's a real person behind
mm-hmm.
the tweet, the more likely it is that somebody's going to read what you're tweeting about.
And you do that manually rather than using like a Hootsuite?
I don't use Hootsuite. And Hootsuite. I don't. Do you?
Yeah.
You do?
We do both.
Yeah. I mean, I'm...
What's Hootsuite?
It's a scheduler, and so you could have a whole week mapped out and have your things deployed at various times, and it allows you to... it's a great thing. We've been having a little bit of problems with figuring out, and one big reason why you do social media is to tag other people, and we haven't been able to get the tags that we've scheduled to actually come out when they're posted.
Uh-huh.
But it's really great for somebody who, you know, may have a day job, is otherwise occupied, and yet you want to keep the threads alive. And so you can post, you know, to Facebook, Twitter, and also, I don't know if you've found this, but different types of people tend to like different types of social media.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your Facebook readers, for example, if you look at your analytics, may be all reading in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not be a morning person, but if you tended to come up with all your posts at midnight, you can have them scheduled to be at, you know, 9 and 11 a.m. on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And if your Twitter people tend to be all the young hipster poets, because
mm-hmm.
it's a short format or whatever, I'm just making this up. Yeah, they could be posting at 9, 11:30, 1 a.m., and you don't have to be up at those times.
Yeah.
You can respond, obviously. I mean, I don't mean to say obviously. I don't know how much you're using social media, but you can respond to whatever people post or respond to your posts at any time. So, but getting them to come out at a time when your readers are going to be there is a really good thing to figure out.
Yeah, because Twitter is this constant feed, and if you're not on when the tweet appears, you'll miss it. So you have to tweet things more than once, and I try to come up with sort of imaginative teasers to get people to read them and to see what works. Sex works. So, it's just...
I'm so surprised.
Wow, we learned that sex works this morning.
Do you find that poets, since they are so focused on concise language, like Twitter more? I'm just curious as a population.
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I haven't really thought of it. I think they really like the clever sound bite.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something.
Punning works,
and yeah, things like that. What I was starting, you know, the reason why I don't use Hootsuite is because I don't always know what's going up, so I can't really, I can't really schedule things in advance. I mean, I think probably what I should be doing is using Hootsuite to publicize things that have already gone up, the previous week's posts.
You could have them provide, let's say, you know, whatever. Hecht has got her thing coming up, and she may be posting whatever she's posting, but on Twitter, you could have five wonderful one-liners from her poems just automatically scheduled.
Yeah, that's right.
That she could submit to you in advance and say, Jennifer Hecht's, this beautiful line, more of her prose this week, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you can do all sorts of things.
Yeah,
we do our events, I know that Kim did some related to you,
yes.
And like specific things about, so you can, I personally really believe that social media should as much as possible feel like you're broadcasting something interesting.
Yes.
Yes, we're promoting something. And I'm not saying we've totally cracked the code. We're still experimenting like everybody else. But I like to think that we're selling with substance.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're selling is we're proud of and is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we're not saying, you know, buy this widget. We
right.
are saying like, you know, this wonderful, we're lucky to have Stacey this week, and aren't you going to be intrigued if you don't know her name? Here's a teaser on Stacey or whatever writers are coming up. Let's see, I had a few other questions. Just unexpected joys that have come up for you out of this, and I love that it's also given people courage. I guess one thing, I do have a question. It's funny that a lot of these people already have their own social media. So is it, there's something about being in this forum that makes them elevate their game, or?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a lot of experiences where somebody will be really, really nervous. You know, they'll need a lot of hand-holding before their week of blogging. And I say, you know, just the forum that you write your post in, it looks like an email size. Just write me an email. Pretend you're writing me an email about this or that, you know. And they turn out to be great. And at the end of the week, they say, "Oh, that was so much fun! I got some really good feedback. Thank you." So that's really great. And people will. Well, I did print out actually one of Jennifer's paragraphs from a post that she wrote.
Oh, please!
And it does. I think it does say a lot about the way the experience goes for a lot of people. So when Jennifer started blogging, she's just terrific. And so right away, I said, you know, how would you like to be a regular contributor, you know, once a week? So she was, for about a year and a half, 2 years, she posted every Wednesday. And fell off because she's a mother of two and writes books and teaches and has a very busy life. But she still posts, you know, consistently. So anyway, writing for this site, I have a sense of the people who might be reading me here that allows me a degree of honesty and comfort shooting from the hip. That is to say, that if I had just sat down to write something interesting every Wednesday and just kept them in a file, I don't think I would have created anything like what I've ended up with after a year and a half of writing to you guys. So thanks. Thanks also to the commenters who gave me such a solid return of emotion on the suicide piece. It really meant the world to me after having opened myself up like that. Thanks also to those who got mad at the piece, though at first it also stung. It gave me information I needed to make a few adjustments. So, yeah, thanks. And that was in a longer post that she wrote. And I do believe that that's the way a lot of the bloggers feel once they are done with, you know, with their period. And it's also why so many have come back. They've asked to come back. Or when I say, you know, you did a great job, I hope you'll consider a return engagement. They're really eager. Last week I was up in Connecticut and saw one of the fellows who had blogged for us a while ago. And he said, "Oh, I've been meaning to write to you. I'd really like to come back." And that's, you know, just a fantastic highlight when that happens, because we don't pay. I mean, I apologize for that, because I believe that writers should be paid for their work and, you know, paid well. And my dream is to someday have enough of an income so that we can pay writers. But they work really hard on their posts, or they think really a lot about them, and their writing is beautiful. And it's so rewarding to be able to put that out there. They otherwise wouldn't have an audience. I mean, a print journal, a small literary, or even a large literary print journal, not the New Yorker, but, you know, Tin House or some of the other ones, their circulation is very small. I mean, they if they have, I don't know, 1,000 subscribers, that's a decent number from an academic press, maybe. We have 60,000 readers a month, and that's a great audience for a poet to have. They know that, and I think that's why they want to do it, but I think that that's not the only, I mean, maybe it is the only reason, but it's just a really nice thing to be able to give a platform for that kind of really solid writing.
I think that's huge. Yeah. And for them to talk to people that aren't already their friends. I mean, there's something very, very great about writing for your own blog.
Yes.
And reinforcing and validating. But it's so great, as she said,
yeah,
to be challenged,
yeah,
too. It makes you
up. And I really like when I see this a lot on Twitter. So for example, Deborah Ager, who blogged for us a week or so ago, she's the one who had the anthology of Jewish poets come out. Her audience, her sort of Twitter world and social media world is sort of the Jewish press. There's Tablet, there's a whole bunch of... So they picked up her posts, and that's an audience that we might not typically reach.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bloggers that we're going to have in a couple of weeks he's a very good poet, but he's also a real boxing fan. And he's going to write about boxing, so I'm really psyched that that's going to attract some boxing fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Do you deal with writers who have a really hard time sort of being through this world of technology that exists now? Because I feel like a lot of writing is just so separate, that the act of actually writing is so separate from keeping up on all of these social media sites. Is that something you help the writers with?
Well, I don't help them with their own. If they ask, I mean, I'm certainly willing to, you know, tell them what I do. I will promote their work on social media. I mean, I promote whatever they do on our blog. Whatever, every post that goes up on the blog, I share with Facebook and Twitter. And that's what I do. And we have a pretty decent reach. So, but in other, I'm not sure I understand what your question is, really.
I guess I'm wondering if sometimes you work with writers who don't have a very big platform previous to coming to you.
Oh, of course. Twitter. Absolutely. I mean, I think most of them don't. Many of them haven't published books. A lot of them have, but not all of them. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it, is getting writers who... that's why I think it's so satisfying, is because here's a writer who has published in a few online journals or maybe here and there, and suddenly they have this platform and they can reach a much bigger audience. And for a number of them, that's done a lot for their work. First of all, the other thing that's great about a group blog with sort of an editorial board, as you know we are, is that it becomes much more legitimate in the publishing world. It's not just somebody self-publishing. They've had to pass muster. And so a lot of people now will put on their resumes or on their online, you know, on their own websites that they've written for the Best American Poetry blog, and that's a legitimate publication. So I really like being able to do that.
Do you want to talk a little bit about it? Have you started to get advertising, or are you...
Oh yes, we
that?
Do. We do get advertising. It's I'm a really soft touch, you know. So I have advertising from literary conferences, from small press, small journals.
But they're paying you.
They're paying us, yes. I met somebody a couple of weeks ago, said you have to charge more. You know, I can't do it if it's a nonprofit, small press. You know, it's just, I want to make it work. I do use Federated Media. It's an aggregator, LIJIT. So it's sort of like Google Ads, but it's a different... I don't really notice a difference in the quality of the ads. They're just not that good. You know, do you know how that works? They just I don't really exactly know how they work, but they have advertisers pay for a certain amount of space on your site. You put up a little code, and the ads are always changing. I think they change depending on what sites you visit.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a lot of ads for, you know, I don't know, travel or sex, right? Yeah, right. You know, it's really interesting. It's one of the funny things that happened early on with when I was using Google Google Ads. I didn't know that you could check off the kinds of ads you don't want. So I just, you know, threw up the code. And as it turned out that week, our guest blogger was Mark Doty, who he's a gay poet. And the poets who were reading at the KGB series, which we publicize, were two gay men. So all of the ads were for, like, hustler, gay, meet your, you know. I was like, and they were really bad. I just mortified. So
and then how does that work? Like, they send their ads through, and then you get a check at the end of the month, or how does it work?
Well, I use PayPal.
Okay.
And so I'll get somebody. They'll say, "What are your advertising rates?" We'll have a back and forth, and they deposit something in their PayPal account, and they send me the art. I put it up. It's very simple, actually. I know a little bit of HTML code, and so I've figured out how to do some very rudimentary things. And
you mentioned a few times that you like looking at the numbers. So clearly you're looking at your analytics.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I actually printed out from, I use Google Analytics, which has gotten extremely complicated. Do you look at it?
We're going to.
Oh my God. They've just made some changes, and they scared me. I mean, it scared me in terms of saying things like, you know, your page load time, and I mean, there was just a lot of information there.
How can you change your page load time?
By compressing things. They're just all, you know, if you do this to your HTML here, you'll get that. I mean, I say, oh my God, I don't know how to do that stuff, you know. So I don't even know if it really matters that much, because I think our pages load pretty quickly. So anyway, there's a lot of information there. I have to just set some time aside and try to wade through it. But I thought some of the analytics from last week were really interesting. Our readers are 50-50 male, female.
That's huge.
Great, isn't it? Yeah, and I just keeping track in my, I don't really keep track in my head. I don't really keep track in a formal way, but I think most of our guest bloggers have been women, for what it's worth. It just turns out that way. Does anybody know about the Vida count?
What is that?
Well, you should all check this out. Vida is this organization. I don't know. It's not an acronym. VIDA. And they started a few years ago. The founders of it became sort of outright outraged by the numbers of books that were being reviewed. The fewer numbers of books by women than by men that were being reviewed in major mainstream publications, as well as the reviewers doing the reviewing. And so they went through, you know, basically the mainstream press and some small press, and they did a breakdown. This last year, this magazine, New York Review of Books, was notorious, published, you know, 85% of its articles were by men. Mm-hmm. I'm making these numbers up, but it was along that order of magnitude. You know, 90% of the books they reviewed were written by men and reviewed by men. You know, that they did that kind of account, and they come out with it every year. I think it's really shaken up a lot of the publishing world. They've either gotten very defensive about why they pick their writers the way they do, or they've really worked hard to change it. So that's sort of interesting. Anyway, they would have no gripe with us. And so our age group, I'd say, you know, 60% are between 18 and 50. Most of them are white. Affluent, between, you know, 28% make between $60,000 and $100,000 a year. 27% make more than $100,000 a year.
So
45% have no college.
Yeah, how do they know that?
I don't know. It's magic. I don't know, actually.
I mean, maybe, because I wonder how much it's like, don't know versus they just default to.
I don't know. That particular figure, the no college, unless
shocks me.
It shocks me, although I do know that we have a lot of high school readers.
Ah, okay.
So that's...
And is the poetry demographic shifting with... I mean, rap is just so huge.
Yeah, poetry genius. You know rap genius and poetry genius?
Mm-hmm.
I don't... Yeah, I mean, we don't have... Actually, we tend not to have any sort of hip-hop... Or performance. We've occasionally had performance poets, right? But not very often. Maybe I should do more to try to get that, bring that.
Because they don't like to write, they like to perform.
That's right. That's right.
They could have, they could just post their YouTube videos. Or,
that's true.
Which would
be
actually interesting.
Yeah, it's good.
I'd be curious to hear the reaction. Have you ever had Taylor Molly?
David knows him, and we've asked him. He's so busy.
But he could just post like...
I know. Well, we could post his YouTube videos.
Yeah.
We actually have them from time to time. I do. I grab a lot of stuff off of YouTube when it's interesting. Yesterday was Frank Sinatra's birthday. My husband's a huge Frank Sinatra fan, so I put up a YouTube of clip from Guys and Dolls. Just, you know, that's keeping the boss happy. So... and I do think we need to do more with video. One of the things I want to do is put up some very short clips of either the poets who come to the poetry forums or David or somebody else, just, you know, 2 minutes of what makes your poetry reading successful, or reading a short poem and saying something about it, you know, a short canonical poem and saying something about it. I think the video is a really nice element to add to blogs these days. People like them.
So your average thing is, on a daily basis, you have your guest blogger,
mm-hmm.
and then whatever you or David feel like posting, and then your random...
Yeah, then our random contributors.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one contributor...
So that maybe it's like 7 a day of different kinds of posts? Or?
I say it ranges between 3 and 10.
Okay. And do you find that people read more during the week than on the weekend?
You know, they read a lot on Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
They read, I think Wednesdays and Thursdays are usually a busy day. Monday morning when people get to work.
Yeah. They're still dealing with reacclimating.
Yes.
Progressing.
It varies. Sometimes there's a general drop off toward the end of the week, Fridays and Saturdays, and then it goes up again on the weekends.
Hmm.
It's really interesting
but
to observe.
But this is, like,
those.
Yeah, the analytics are so useful in terms of going back to, you know, are you going to use a schedule or, like, sweet, you know, maybe you had all this inspiration, but you don't want to post it on a day that nobody's reading.
That's
so.
Right. Although you can always resurrect, and we have such a rich archive. I mean, there's some of the posts back from 2009, 2010 that are so good, and that was before Facebook was really huge, before Twitter. And they really deserve an audience. And so I've just been...
Greatest hits?
Tweeting them again. And or else just taking the whole post and copying it and just posting it with a little note at the bottom. This appeared in such and such a date. And that's really fun to do because I read some of these posts and I think, wow, why did I forget about this one?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of a really talented young writer wrote a beautiful piece about Seamus Heaney.
Mm-hmm.
And... I was looking for something, and I found his post, and I thought, wow, this will be really relevant now because he just died. And so I put that up again. It got a lot of readers.
Nice.
Really.
So knowing these analytics, does that help you skew or shift what you...
I actually don't really pay that much attention, like the search terms. I can tell you that if you put Bob Dylan, Charles Bukowski... In your post, you will get more readers somehow.
I hear that Bukowski is one of the most shoplifted
writers. Yes, yeah. I happen to really like Charles Bukowski, and we've posted about him quite a few times. I pay attention to things that are very topical. So, for example, the first episode of the second season of Mad Men. In fact, the entire second season of Mad Men was informed by a Frank O'Hara poem. That was read at the closing scene of the very first episode. This poem, and I think the last episode was called Meditations in an Emergency, which is the name of the poem. So we're huge Mad Men fans. Watched the show, heard the poem, and I said, we have to write have to get on the blog right now. Everybody's going to be searching for that poem.
Mm.
And they'll come to our site, which is exactly what happened.
Yes.
And then...
Smart.
So,
very smart.
So then we heard from AMC, and they wanted an interview for their blog and
nice.
A piece. I mean, it was really great.
Really,
so
really nice.
So those are the kinds of things, you know, when you see poetry and popular culture, I always try to tie it in somehow. Levi's did a bunch of ads using Walt Whitman. Was a Go Forth. I don't know if you remember those ads, Go Forth.
Yes.
That was Walt Whitman. So, you know, just that's the way I try, you know, try to increase readers. They always say, you know, pay more attention to the word, the search terms. And if you use Google Analytics, you can actually get their advice on how to change things up. But I don't really want to do that. I mean, first of all, I don't have the energy to do that. It's just, and I don't want to be dishonest about bringing people to the blog and then they're not thinking they're getting something and they're getting something else.
You said there's 60,000 readers a month. And how long is the blog? You said...
Since 2008.
2008? It's only... That kind of feels like it's been around forever.
I know.
So, in the beginning, I mean, how...
Oh my
How
God!
Long
the
did
beginning.
It take to get to 60,000.
It took.
That's
it
a lot.
It didn't take very long, actually. We were there. Well, I mean, I don't think it took that. We were there within, I would say, 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it started slow. We didn't do any kind of publicizing, and then this fellow Don Scher, who's now the editor of Poetry Magazine, he used to be the managing editor, the assistant editor. He put out on Facebook. Well, my husband is very interested in finance, and he had one of these, you know, career crises where MBA, poetry. I wish he had chosen the MBA. He'd write poetry anyway and we'd be rich. But, you know, but so he was writing these financial market reports. And so Don Scher was commenting on them. And then he put up either on the Poetry Foundation's blog or on Facebook or somewhere, hey, did you all know that the Best American Poetry has a blog and they're writing about finance? And that sort of gave us a jump. And then because he was involved in the blog, I invited him to be a guest blogger. He was great. So yeah, there were a few little moments. National Poetry Month helped. People started looking, you know, for poetry. So there's things. I mean, now it's pretty steady. I think in order to get it to the next level of, you know, really explosive, more explosive, we need a much slicker design. I mean, I think I have to hire somebody. I mean, I don't have the skills to do that myself, and I need...
Well, I mean, sometimes, too, you can just write an appeal to, you know, can I be your pro bono project this fall or whatever. Ask a major agency. You got all these
things.
That's
a good idea.
I'll work with you on
that. Yeah.
All right, so
that's
who
really great.
Well, because you just preempted my last question, which was your future. So we're going to make sure in 2014 you get the redesign you want. But people in the audience, what kind of blogs are you already doing or do you feel stuck on or want to brainstorm out? Anne, did you want to talk about your blog?
Yes, I do. Because I find once I get a topic I like and I want to start reading about it, if I read, it's hard for me to write, too. I get sidetracked on the research.
Mm-hmm.
I started a blog in 2011 called The Daily Tuna. And some people have suggested, just putting some of it's politics and parenting, basically, are the two
cool.
main topics.
Mm-hmm.
So put the politics in a different blog.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria said, no, keep it because, you know.
I'm a big personal believer in you know, there are all these rules out there. I think that the weirder you are and the intersection of a hybrid of interests is going to be more likely. I mean, in the same way that, like, look, she just shared an example of, you know, a poet writing about finance. Oh, interesting intersection. So, anyway.
Okay. But anyway, I just feel like The Daily Tuna is fine for my life in New York because my friend who wanted me to start the blog was going to be like a political opinion, a policy blog. But by the time I got it together, I had a child. So it's like, well, these mommy blogs are in, so why don't you make kind of a mommy blog? Okay, so that's good. That's fine for here, but, you know, if I go to, like, a conference in Washington, D.C., I feel kind of dumb saying that my blog is called The Daily Tuna. And everyone's like, tuna? You know, they all have these, like, you know, huge acronym for their organization.
Well, what's the derivation of the name?
So, it was originally, I was going to call it spam and use the word SPAM for
kind of an acronym for like the Society for the Prosperity of America. Kind of like a joke thing.
That's good.
During the Florida recount, I collected all the things I got and wrote some commentary, and it became kind of like a little newsletter before Facebook and all that. So that was sort of the idea. But because it had the letters of spam in it, it got pulled. The security.
Right. Lucky didn't get arrested.
A joke spam. So anyway, in the meantime, I thought, okay, so what's a name that will be so innocuous that nobody will, you know, an alias of another canned lunch meat called, you know, tuna. So then it became the Daily Tuna, just so it wouldn't cause any problems for anybody. And it kind of made sense. People kind of liked it.
Yeah.
So the new name, the new sub-blog I've started is, I first was going to be the Daily Dish, then it's the Daily Dish, and then the Daily Feast. So I'm not really writing it daily. Moment.
And also you're not a food blog. I mean, your food's for thought.
But I do weave in a few, because most readers of blogs are women. So it does kind of, occasionally I do put in a recipe or, you know.
Well, food is very political, I guess, these days, too.
Yes,
it is. Sure is.
It is, yes.
Yes. But, so anyway, that's kind of where I am.
And are you the sole? Are you the single writer?
Well, I relate to your advertising issue too, because I don't know how to filter. I thought I had all the filters properly, and one time I had a really embarrassing, like human trafficking advertisement. Finally, I got like the head of a really good thing. Take to read it, and then it's got this, you know. Like hot chicks in D.C. or something.
Yeah.
God, hey, ruined. But. Yeah,
so
I just pulled the ads completely.
Yeah.
And they weren't paying me that much anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, A, my big issues are how I support myself doing this, and B,
Are you the only contributor? Is it all you?
As of right now, I haven't tried to pull in any. During the internet boom, I wrote for a blog that a friend of mine, not a blog, but she had a website and a little... cocktails, you know, thing for the tech industry. And, you know, when she did finally get some funding, she didn't cut any of us in. I just sort of thought, I didn't want to be like a Martha Stewart type where, you know, or Huffington where...
You're exploiting people.
I really want to get paid. Right.
Well, but what about, in your case, since you want to build your profile, maybe your blog then becomes... the reposts of other places you blog, so that then people who've discovered you elsewhere can find your archive. But if you're not interested, and understandably, or, you know, your mom, whatever, like, you make it your project to find other places to blog and just treat that as the archive.
Oh, okay. Well, see, for the same token, like, I just feel like it's, you know, why should I...
But you're exploiting
them.
But if you want to get exposure... Like, you're using them. I mean, like, for instance, right now, I used to teach journalism classes because I used to believe, and I actually was myself making quite a nice salary in the 90s and early aughts, just being a full-time freelance writer, and I wasn't doing annual reports or whatever. I was making, you know, high five figures, low six figures, which was particularly 10 years ago good. But now it's really hard to do. So now I tell anybody who wants to be a thought leader of any kind or go into a field where what you have to say for yourself is important, you think about all journalism you do or blogging you do as getting access to a new population. So you're doing it for free right now anyway. So why not do it for free for somebody else that can bring you new people that you wouldn't otherwise meet?
Okay.
That's not like I'm right, but it's an approach that then, first of all, makes yourself hate yourself less for doing something for free because you're actually potentially getting new people to notice you.
Okay.
And then you still have in your bio, you know, and for more great commentary, you can find more at, you know, the Daily Tuna, whatever it is. And then ultimately, if your traffic increases, because every time you're on another person's blog, more people start to subscribe to you or are interested in you, etc., then your advertising can go up because you're getting...
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing to do post exchanges. Because if you have somebody with their own audience posting on your blog... then they'll bring people to you. So you can, I mean, if the idea of just putting yourself out there for nothing, you find, you know, really unpalatable, then you can maybe do a trade. You know, there are ways to, I think that's one of the reasons why having guest bloggers is a really good way to get more of an audience.
you know, it's hard. It's really, it's hard, but you just have to.
And one thing I will say, not to find, you know, a Pollyanna-ish upside, but there is something to be said for people who do things for free bring major passion. And that passion then is what's going to make somebody attracted to you in the future, too. So, I mean, I think that when you go to this site, you cannot help but just be infected with this enthusiasm for ideas
mm-hmm.
and language
yeah.
that just completely communicates.
Yeah, in fact, I will say one thing that's really nice about the guest bloggers. In fact, you sent me John Foy, who was fantastic, and he recommended Joshua Mahegan, who was... Do you know him as well?
I met him through
John. He's a really great guy, and he did a fantastic series of posts, and he spent a lot...